Welcome back to the Bitter Jurors podcast. We are a queer Survivor superfan podcast. As always, I'm one of your hosts, Eric Reining. Sorry for my voice cracking, like I'm 15 years old. But, you know, joined by two people who are also not teenagers anymore, Sam Stanish and Christine Palin.
Hello.
1 million hearts.
I was going to say something about that. Derek, if Derek has 1 million hearts, I'm one of them. If Derek has 1 heart, I'm one of them. If Derek has no hearts, I'm dead.
It's me against the hearts.
There could be 1 million hearts in the room, and 999,999 of them, blah, 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 blah. But, you know, our little RPG party could not be complete without, you know, perhaps one of the most important roles, and that is one of the knight. Owen Knight is here.
Oh, that was nice. Good.
That was good. Wow. Slick intro. Well, yeah, happy to be here, and thanks for having me, y'all. This is great.
We will be expecting you to tank any hatred we get from this episode. Meat shield.
Yeah, yes. Very cool. I'll try.
So 3 seasons on. Owen, how are you liking this season of Survivor? What's your relationship with Survivor since, you know, your time on the show, all that good stuff?
Yeah, so I mean, certainly watching 44 was the most, like, I guess, atypical for me. After watching my season air, I still felt very much I was in it. You know, I felt like I knew a lot of the 44 cast. Like, there's certainly this kind of sister season energy between the ones that film back to back. So for 45 and 46, it's been nice to feel like I'm a fan again. Particularly this season, I feel like the least attached or like the least like involved with it compared to the last two. And I'm excited to see how it keeps unfolding. I think it's been very Banu and Yanu centric, which of course, since they've lost, like I get it, but I am excited to start like understanding who Tim is and understanding the dynamics on the other two tribes. So I'm optimistic. I really think 90 minutes is the sweet spot for an episode, but just when we've had 7 hours on one tribe, it's just been just a little different and not the most enjoyable, but I'm holding out hope that it'll improve.
90 episodes, that's more like Australian Survivor.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's just like the fact that the episode 2 was also 2 hours, I think just like pushed it a little too over the edge. And it's like, we have so much time. It feels odd that we like only really know about Yanu. It feels like, don't really know what's going on there. And I'm like, we all say, oh, 41 probably would have been better with like 90 minutes. And I'm like, I don't know. Maybe not. Erica would still be invisible. I don't know.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And I think also like the fact that we basically had 2 Banu boot episodes just with Rangit Medivac coming out of nowhere. Like they set it up that Banu was going home twice. So yeah, the past couple have just been so focused. But yeah, we'll see.
I also felt like last week was a Banu boot episode, but then in this episode, it felt like in the retelling, they were really pushing that it would have been Kenzie. Like even Tiffany was like, if I had booted Kenzie and found all this out right after, like I'd be so pissed, I'd jump in the ocean. And like, that's just so shocking to me that last episode was like seemingly now in history going to have been a Kenzie boot when every single episode, they outlined clear reasons why maybe Banu should have gotten home instead.
That's a really good point. That's a really good point.
Yeah, it was like, it's like we're rewriting history here. It was very weird that that was like the narrative they were trying to push that like, well, maybe Banu would not have gone or like fully like Kenzie was going to go home, period. I was like, you're gaslighting me right now, Jeff Probst. I don't understand.
That's not what we saw. Yeah. I just really got a kick of how fast Banu just like imploded as soon as Jeff left the beach. Like you can see in the shots, like the lighting was the same. Like 5 minutes had passed since Jeff got on the boat and Banu's just like, bah, here's everything I told them. And it's impressive, honestly.
I wish they had the little like lower third say like literally 5 minutes later.
Yeah. 3 minutes later. Yeah.
It was interesting the beginning of the episode, like they like combined the previously on with the beginning of the episode because they like told the story of last episode. They showed a shot of Jeff walking down the beach away from the camp and then they like started the first scene. So it was all very like these are sister episodes.
Yeah, it was kind of cool. I can't recall that happening very frequently. So that it was interesting. But then, yeah, it was like watching a slow car crash or something. I was just like, why are you doing this? But it was interesting for sure. Yeah. One of a kind player.
I think either Chris or Sam and Christine, I think they're like streams are ahead of mine or something. And so the text I was getting in like the Bitterjurors group chat was like, please be prepared for, I was like, surely it can't be that insane. And then God was, or Bonnie was like screaming at God. I was like, okay, I wasn't expecting that.
What I've learned from being on Twitter for Survivor episodes over the last 3 years is that Quebec gets the episodes like 1 minute, and then CBS airs it East Coast in America like 3 minutes later, and then Paramount Plus is like 2 minutes behind that.
I know. I always need to have like, because I watch on Global, and I always have to like delay my texts and tweets, but it's still sometimes too early. Like I will like still like do it. I'll wait like 2.5 minutes, and then I'll tweet something, and then they'll be like, "That hasn't aired in the U.S. yet." I'm like, "Well, call Dev, like, because somehow we have it all sorted out." And I know Omer has that problem. He's been
Sorry, Canada Superior.
Yes,
not my fault.
Yeah,
socialist medicine, early survivor. Yeah. What can't you guys do?
It's really unfair. And so, I mean, is the Canadian statistic of winners still good? I don't know what the like stats are on like how Canadians do on
Caleb brought it down.
Yeah. Caleb
still
and
overall. We'll see what happens with Venus, but
it's much better than Americans. I mean, 2 out of 7 is much better than 43 out of 700.
700. They're overpowered. That's why there weren't any on 43. That was like, I loved everyone's theory. They were like, there's no Canadians on 43. That must mean Marianne or Omer must win.
I don't remember that. That's funny.
It just makes sense. Like, we got humbled pretty hard. So, like, America, we had to, you know, take the power back a little. It's only fair.
Obama needed his $400,000, so he said no more Canadians.
Yeah, it's bad. It's bad for the economy if the Canadians.
So much of this episode was all about Bonu's disastrous trip to the journey, where he revealed everything, and then he later went on to reveal that he revealed everything. Oh, and did you go on a journey? And like, can you talk through what that experience was like? I can't remember.
Yeah, I did. So in our third episode, we won the challenge, and it was Noelle that we had sent. Dwight and Gabler had kind of built a relationship on their journey, and Dwight was kind of mouthing to us to choose Noelle, and then we picked James, and then we picked me. Ironic, just the way things ended up going down with me and James that we had met and like had good vibes from the beginning. But I did not spill too much. Noelle was kind of the one doing most of the talking because she was on the bottom over at Vessi. And so I saw this as an opportunity to build a relationship, to extend an olive branch, maybe gain an ally down the road, which is what happened with her. When I got back, just the classic, like, I did not play the game. Like, you can check my bag if you want, blah, blah, blah. So I don't think I would have exposed as much as Bonu did. Like, to me, I see very little upside to doing that. Because it's not like they're on your tribe and they can be numbers for you and help you survive the pre-merge. But it just really blew my mind that he then told them that he told Ben and Liz. Like, that you could argue that telling Ben and Liz could have upside down the road, but just telling Kenzie and Tiffany and Q what he had said is just, I don't know what he was thinking. I mean, this poor guy is just too pure for it. I guess he just felt so guilty. He just couldn't bring himself to keep lying.
Yeah.
He's too invested in radical honesty. But no, yeah, I agree that on paper, like telling, and you're in Bono's position, you're in a bad position on the tribe, you don't have a vote on your tribe. His best bet right now was just they have somehow can comp out to merge or to a swap if it happens. And so like, if from Bono's position, like kind of being like, all right, it's not going to work with my current tribe. I need to hope I make it to where I can meet up with people. It's not a bad move to like use that as an opportunity to share some information, ingratiate yourself, and maybe they'll pick you up as a number. But exactly, it was like, if you do that, you need to not tell your tribe, because it's like, okay, cool, I sold you guys out. I might have an option because now they'll know who to target. You know, it's the combination of things that was quite bad.
Also, you know, think there's probably a better way to deliver the information on the journey than what we ended up seeing.
Like, oh, you could say like there are three, or like I'm on the bottom, not like those people are literal geniuses who you need to vote out very instantly as soon as you can. Like, I don't, like you said, Owen, I don't know how helpful that is in the short, middle, or long run. But you know, God bless Banu.
God bless Banu.
He's exit press that he wanted to. He told Tiff and Q and Kenzie like what he said because he didn't want them to find out from someone else. Like if one of them went on a journey, which I get.
But then that's you recognizing you should not have said it.
And also, I see his like logic there, but maybe then tell Tiffany that you sold out Kenzie. Tell Kenzie that you sold out Q. And there are ways to not tell all three of them everything that just guaranteed that they would all be pissed off at you. Like there could be a way to maybe try to spin it to like, you know, say like, hey, I really want to work with you, Kenzie. Like, I think Tiff and Q are super tight, whatever. But yeah, he just really just laid it all out there. I also thought to go back to last week, just like the shooting of the journey was so funny. Just watching him like fall to his knees and then the camera guy kind of had to go over the table that the game was on, and just like the cinematography of it and just the Banu experience in general has been so unique just because like his physicality is just unmatched in terms of just like the way he's just like flopping around and everything. It's just, it's been goofy and funny. And like, as like weirded out and just like, I was like, what is happening? Like that was going through my head at first when I was watching the episode, but then just like watching clips back and everything, it's just like, it's just kind of art in a way, just like the journey they're taking us on with the stages of grief and everything. It's hard to not feel bad for him. But then at the same time, like, the fifth time he said his million hearts line, I was like, okay, this is losing its zip a little bit.
It was great the first time.
Oh, it was very endearing the first time. And then the second time I was like, okay. And then by the third, fourth, fifth, I was like, all right.
Got it.
Like,
yeah.
We get it.
I think we got a really good sense of who Banu is as an actor. Like he knows his lines clearly,
he does.
But the blocking I think is an issue. Like we said, like the camera people, it's like, where are you going, Banu? Like, let's stay in frame. Like,
and Owen, as someone who has been on an episode of Scream Queens, do you have any suggestions?
I forgot about that.
Oh my God. No, I mean, that was so funny. Like I didn't get to speak in that at all, but that just whole experience was, they had filmed 22 Jump Street at Tulane when I was a student. And so a bunch of friends and I signed up as extras in that. And then we were in the database. And then I got an email one day that they needed a college-aged Asian male for a show. And I was like, this is going to be racist, but I would like money.
This is my time to shine.
Yeah, like,
not Ryan Murphy, not him.
Yeah, not my proudest $100. But no, I mean, just, I wonder what this will do for Banu's acting career. Like, you got to think there's at least a couple people out there who are just like, totally enamored by Banu and would love to do it. But I've loved the tweets where people have found some of his headshots and stuff. It's just like, I saw one that was like, when Banu's on the Traitor season 3, then what? And it's just like these shots of him in like this top hat and crazy. It's just funny.
He's like, I mean, he's very much new era Debbie Wanner in that way, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. Jack of all trades.
He was an extra in The Holdovers, so like he's been in Oscar-nominated movies than I have been.
Wait, wow. I didn't even see that. I just saw the one where he was in like a commercial at like a water cooler.
Yeah.
Yeah.
People are trying to undersell him, but he has 3 upcoming projects, so.
I mean, we've been waiting ever since Colleen Haskell, I feel like, for someone to really break out into acting after Survivor. So
he is the new Colleen Haskell. Just as beloved.
Someone call Rob Schneider.
Yeah, it's like, bring him out of retirement, get Banu in as the love interest. I'm here for it. I'm ready.
Wasn't someone from Redemption Island, like in Pretty Little Liars or something?
Oh yes, it's what's his name?
Wyatt Nash.
Wyatt Nash. He's been in a few things.
That's a great actor name. Honestly.
Incredible, yeah. Rolls off the tongue more sexily than Matt Elrod. Yeah, definitely good rebrand.
Like he's doing. Oh yeah, he was also on Riverdale.
Mm. Oh,
I remember. That's what I saw him in. But he's also in Ford versus Ferrari.
What?
Perhaps the next Charles Melton.
Let him go.
It
seems that he has been in a lot of Lifetime movies.
Love that.
It pays the bills. Charles Melton is the May December guy, right?
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. Yes.
Oh, he was so
robbed. Love him.
Robbed of a nomination.
Seriously. Yes. Yeah. He was incredible.
Mm-hmm. My God. I'm like trying to think what else has even occurred on this episode of Survivor.
Well, I got a kick out of the jumping scene on Sega.
Yes.
That was so bizarre. Because I think it was Sam, you tweeted, like, it didn't matter. Like,
it wasn't.
Like, wasn't like you had to grab anything.
In the tree mail, they're like, it's got to be one of those things where you jump and get the key. And so you're like, okay, I get it. Like, yes, she'll probably need to be better at jumping. But then to get there, it's you just jump.
You just jump. You could walk off and be there. And that gap looked pretty small compared to the one we had in a similar challenge. Because like Hunter almost like broke his leg on the platform. Like he jumped all the way over there. And I know he's a super insanely athletic person, but yeah, they must have shortened the distance. So yeah, she would have been fine either way. But I thought it was cute.
The staircase jump platform was not high enough. That thing needed to be like twice the size, I think.
Yeah, it did. I wonder if it was, I'm sure it was the same one that we had, but when you're on that thing, it is pretty like gnarly and mind blowing. But yeah, that was an interesting challenge. I will say with the challenges, I do like that they're mixing up that it's not a puzzle at the end every time. You know, we're having some of these like skill, dexterity kind of things. And I really liked in the reward that there was the element where everyone had to get a ring off of the pole. So you can't just have Hunter do all four or whatever. But yeah, I thought the Sega sequence, like I'm trying to figure out what story they're trying to tell with them, just because like it has felt very like kumbaya in a way. And then of course this was the first time we're getting the like gem setting the table to try to sow some discord. Like what did y'all think of that? Did you think that was too much? Or
I mean, it seems like what they're trying to tell us is that everybody's like there's no game happening basically. Yeah. Like Charlie and Maria are there and sort of supposedly in the middle, and that's all we have to know right now.
Right.
Yeah, the gem stuff is like it is like overplaying, I think, to like be doing this, because it's like when it's like I get it, like it's not a bad idea to like try to get the target on someone else, but it's such a small tribe, and with the whole like losing a vote, if this was a normal idol hunt and there was no element of like you can't vote, like what happens, Gem is like really banking on she will find it, like once they lose, and like because if she doesn't, she doesn't have a vote, or they're like what the fuck is that, or someone the person who finds it, it's just like they're going to instantly find out it was fake when they go to vote and they didn't find the idol and they have a vote. And so it's like it's really I think short-sighted. I mean like it worked in the meantime, we're seeing on the next time that it might bounce back on her, and you know, obviously the next times are can be quite misleading, but yeah, just it struck me as a little short-sighted, because it's like you could just say maybe no one will find it, like there have been idols that haven't been found, and that happens, but like with how small this tribe is and how quickly they will eventually find out, like that was okay, clearly someone else found it, it eliminates the person who does find it, because if they don't find it and have a vote, like you know, everyone's gonna be like, hey, that person didn't find it potentially. I don't know, it's just like really I think unnecessarily risky, but they're bored because there's nothing to do, because the tribes are so small, like, and it's I think we brought this up, I think a big change would help is having two bigger tribes, because even if they don't go to tribal, there's just more like variables at play, more potential for conversation to happen. It just gets so boring. We have to see the same six people talk to each other every episode and they never go to tribal. Like, of course we're gonna run out of things to show.
Yeah, no, that's all a really good point. And like you were saying, like if she hadn't planted the thing, like she would have totally increased her chances of finding it. Now she's got five other people who are going to be looking around. It's like, where's the box? Where, like, I got to go dig around and do this. And it just like totally increases the risk of getting caught. And yeah, I didn't see the upside of it. I think it was Steven on the know-it-alls. He called it winning tribitis, which is very much a thing. Like on my season, we lost the first immunity challenge, but then we went on a little run for the rest of the pre-merge. And that's kind of why the whole like Gabler and Ellie situation blew up so dramatically at the merge, is like we had all this pressure just building and building and building. And, you know, we had talked through every possible permutation, and there's just so much like anxiety to go to tribal. And honestly, I wish we had lost again in the pre-merge and just dealt with it more privately in a sense, and just like gone into the merge a little bit more united. Obviously it worked out for one of us, but for me, it really kind of like blew up my game to just like all of a sudden have this like dramatic thing happening. So I'm curious. I think I have a feeling that Sega is going to go to tribal this upcoming episode. Like, I'm holding out hope that Yanu does pull it out, just because I think, you know, watching a tribe get decimated is not super exciting. And I just think with Hunter on Nami, like he's just so good at all these like random things. So I don't know. Do y'all think that Yanu is going to go again?
I hope not.
For our like sake as television viewers, I hope not. Have we, I guess, like officially decided there won't be a swap? It feels like there's no inkling of it, except for Mariah's very cryptic tweet, where she's like,
"You're just fucking with us."
Like, swap over to CBS to watch the mixer or something.
Buff off your remote control. And
that's so funny.
And then it didn't happen. There was no like hint of it in the next time on for this week. Mm-hmm. Always do. So I mean, yeah, I guess not next episode. And then we're basically almost at the merge anyway.
No, then I think we are at the merge, because they've been merging at 13. Like there've been five pre-merge boots, and then the mergatory boot. So yeah, I think I guess there won't be one this year, which is a shame. Like, I don't know. Like you want to see that. I really, back to Christine's point about two tribes, like I really think we are dying for two tribes. Like I'm really hoping 47 and or 48 have two tribes. And I get that they're like, I think they think 18 is the sweet spot, and then they're like, oh, we must have gender balanced tribes. But I think with 90 minute episodes, you could get away with a cast of 20. And still be able to show them enough and like do a double boot episode where it's not just a total like random person going home or whatever. Or like if you think about if you wanted to do, you know, one tribe has five men, four women, one has four men, like you could like, you know, thinking about 42, you could put like Romeo, Zach, Jonathan, and, you know, someone like normal sized on one and have them be the four dudes or whatever. Or you can open it up more for non-binary people. Like there's so many options they could do. And it's I just hope they aren't stuck in this like it must be 18, it must be three tribes, because I don't know. We it's been played out at this point. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Even just for variety's sake, just like we could try something else.
Back the girls. Like oh shit, it would be exciting if they did two tribes again. Like people would be like, oh my god, players would be like, wow, we didn't expect this. And like this is something we bring up so often.
Yeah.
Like, they harp on the idea that this new era of Spire is so unpredictable, but like the format stays.
The format's so similar. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, like you said, Owen, it's like, why can't we like switch up like the it's like San Juan del Sur, one of the greatest seasons of the television program that we watch, happens to start with fewer women than men. And it also ends with like three women at the end. So it's like, I think there is absolutely room there to play around with that. Like, I just think for whatever reason, they're really locked into the three tribes. It's like, if we start out at three again, it's like at least swap into two, like do something else, please.
Yeah. Or if they love three so much, you could start with two and then swap to three like they did on David vs. Goliath and, you know, Ghost Island and all these seasons. Yeah. I'm hopeful that they're hearing it.
Do six tribes of three. Just like try something else.
Like if you're just gonna do red, blue, yellow, or green, orange, purple, you can do all six at once. You love those colors so much. There you go. You can use all six of your little tribe colors.
Like Cook Islands too. We can open it up more to more ethnicities.
Yeah, more than just, you know, the four.
The
I
big
guess
four. Yeah.
Six tribes of three, but the worst two tribes go to tribal council together.
Ooh.
Yeah, about that.
That would actually be wild. I actually kind of like that idea.
Me too. Like it's like we can switch in and out. You know, but I feel like maybe we're yelling at a brick wall at this point.
For sure.
Isn't that what this is all about, though?
Yeah, that is what a podcast is, actually.
Yeah. To go back to Sega for a second, I just really love their massive reaction to their first failure in the game is like losing this reward challenge. Like Maria is like so upset, like talking about her like how failure, and then she's like learning about how failure won't just define her or whatever. But it's like it's literally just about like these fish where like they've won literally every single time and they go on to win the immunity challenge in the episode. Like they're like fully still winning everything, but like they lost once and they're like, we're never gonna win ever again.
Very relatable. You know, you lose one smash match and you're just like, I'm never gonna win again, it's okay guys.
I thought Ben handled like his interaction with Maria and that really well. He seems like such a sweetie. I really like Ben? Have y'all like taken to him, or do you think like, yes. I know some people think he's corny, but I really like him.
I like him a lot.
I think he's great.
I could have gone either way on him in the preseason, but mm-hmm. I think he's been very fun and like sweet and like genuine.
Yeah.
And sure. He's like shouting in the chat, like on the sideline of the challenge. He's like, it's not your mindset, it's your grind set. Fully shouted. He's hilarious.
Yeah. He seems like good people.
And the overalls help too, I think, you know, just visually. Like, mm-hmm. seems like a sweet man. Excited to see more of him, hopefully.
Yeah.
And, yeah. Great hair, then, too.
Good head of hair. And then poor Tim. Like, I when I saw that Tim's, like, homesick, missing his family scene got relegated to a secret scene, I was like, uh-oh. Like, to me, that's not a good sign for anyone who has Tim as their winner pick. But, I'm excited for just, like, us to see these characters get fleshed out more. Because, like, even on Nami, like, they are starting to give us a little more nuggets of drama. And I think that one has, like, there's more tension there. Siga seems to be more of the kumbaya of the two. What did y'all think of Tevin floating Soda's name out there?
I don't believe that was real. Like, I think that was not a real...
The Frankenbite.
Of events, literally at all. Like, I just feel like every single thing was fully manufactured and like twisted and is not actually going to happen. But I think it's an interesting storyline that they made up.
It's totally fabricated.
Owen, as someone who was on like a tribe that went on like a bit of a winning streak, do you guys just like float ideas if you have no idea plan of following through just to have something to talk about? Like, I'm curious what your experience with that. Do you just kind of like not talk game at all? Like, what do you do?
No, you certainly do still talk game. And yeah, like, I think it just depends on like the flow of the day and who's off giving a confessional, who's off swimming, who's taking a dump. Like, you know, when you're with certain combinations of people, I'm like, well, Derek and Sam, like, what if we voted out Christine, you know, like, and you don't, I think he handled it well where he made it sound like it wasn't something he was like gung-ho about or really strongly considering, or more so just like just exploring the option. And I think you do want to explore all your options and talk through it and just like see the viability of potential plans. But yeah, it's again, the winning tribitis of it is just like, you know, we might as well just talk about it just so you aren't totally scrambling if you were to lose. Cause that period of time, I'm sure as y'all know by now, like it's not long. Like after you get back from an immunity challenge, it's like, you know, 4 hours maybe. So it's hard.
Both this and something that happened on Yanu a couple episodes ago is all about people being jealous that they're not someone else's number one. Like Hunter is like, I've been wanting to get Soda out because she's my rival for being Tevin's number one or whatever. But it's like, you get to the end in like a group of four these days. Like you don't need to be someone's number one. And that was also Q's issue with Kenzie initially, also like with Tiffany. And like I just don't understand the logic they're trying to present where Hunter's like, Hunter and Tevin are both like, yeah, I'd rather go into the merge with Venus, who like we don't
will
like,
flip on us,
yeah, than this woman who we've been working with very tightly since like day one, moment one of the show.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. You made a really good point about like getting to the end as a group of four, because that really is what it is. Like, and then you're thinking through your permutations of, okay, who could I beat at fire? Who do I not want to beat at fire? Whatever. But y'all watch this, the most recent season of Australian Survivor? You watched Titans versus Rebels? Or
we did not.
You did not. Okay.
I watched on Twitter.
Yeah, you watched on Twitter.
Yeah.
But basically, there are a few instances in that season where people take out someone else's number one. And I always thought that was like a dubious idea, because it's like you would piss them off. Like if it was me and someone voted out my number one, I'd be like, well, I'm not going to make you my new number one now. Like, fuck you. Right. Like, you just did this to me. But I was shocked at how frequently on this Australian season that they were just like, all right. And then they linked back up and it worked. So I don't know what that says about me as a person, if I'm too vindictive or whatever. But there could be some merit to that. But yeah, to your point, Sam, it's like, why? Like, it's a final three. Like, it's not a final two anymore. So
yeah,
I don't know.
Let's just chalk it up to mateship, as we do with
mateship,
all things Australian Survivor.
Yes, old mateship.
I feel like that's a big thing on Big Brother also, especially because like we hear their logic more just because of the live feeds, where they're like, yeah, like we'll take them out so that we can bring in this person who they're closely working with tighter to us. But it's like, it's never gonna work that way. Yeah, they will be mad.
Yeah,
yeah. I guess.
Oh, go ahead, Derek.
No, it's just because it's like a weird, twisted, like, I don't know, like almost like toxic relationship logic of like, I'm going to isolate you like socially and like force you to be with me instead.
Yeah, there is certainly some like, I don't know, like Stockholm syndrome might not be the right word for it, but it's like, you've got nowhere to turn, so come to us. But I think in Big Brother, it almost makes more sense just because they have so much more time to like massage the relationship and they've got a full week. Speaking of shows I just watch on Twitter, but
yes, the original, the blueprint.
Yeah, the blueprint. But yeah,
every season of the challenge we watched just based off of Gamer Vev.
Yeah. I watched USA 2 very closely on Gamer Vev since I was invested because I wanted to see how Cass did. But yeah, just with Nami, like, do y'all think Venus has a chance moving forward? Like, I imagine she'll flip once the merge occurs, but I am a little nervous for her. She seems like she had a rough at the beginning, and watching Soda kind of abandon her was really hard to watch. And then of course the horrible luck with Randan, like I think she might just have the worst luck right now. I don't know.
I see Mergatory Boot in her future. I just think what I'm getting, like, not even getting to the edit talk, but just of like what with the way the Mergatory works, like that this, if she ends up on the losing tribe, like, or the losing group, whatever the fuck they call it, like, it's just so easy, like that's so often just is like, well, everyone her original tribe like hates her, like this is like an easy way to get rid of one of their numbers. And so I just feel like if she makes it to the merge, she's just gonna have like a lot of work to do because of the way the mergatory works. She's like needs to be in the winning tribe, or I think like I see that in her future.
Yeah, no one on Nami is going to be riding for her.
That's no.
Yeah.
If she's vulnerable, they're going to be like, yeah, get that bitch out.
Bye.
Like, no, decided she's evil, like, from day one.
She's evil.
Yeah.
Speaking of the Mergatory, this episode gave us the soundbite that Jeff Probst will never lie to you. Owen, do you ever feel like you've been lied to by Jeff Probst?
Me directly, no, I don't think so. I actually really like Jeff, and I was, like, pleasantly surprised with just, like, not that I was surprised necessarily, but it was more of like a, like, you know, the don't meet your heroes moments. Like it was the inverse of that. Like I was very, very pleased with all my interactions with Jeff, but yeah, I'm sure Danny McRae is out there shaking his fist in the air somewhere. Just like, no, he will lie to you. Our king for fighting that. But,
yeah. Danny at least scared him into not lying to you.
Yeah.
Anymore.
Yeah. Maybe Danny's to thank for that being a true statement now. But I always found, now that I like think about it in hindsight, like just like the way production works and like the questions they ask you in confessional and things, like I always felt it was very like fair and not leading and just like exploring options. But like when you're there and you're tired and you're hungry and you aren't really grasping things, like there were moments where I'm like, why are you asking me that? I'm like, it's interesting. But yeah, it's I don't know. I just the whole concept, it was funny. When we got to Mergatory and Jeff was, he phrased it weird. He was like trying to tell us that there wasn't an hourglass anymore, but it like came out of his mouth weird. And he's like, and now, you know, no one can reverse take it from you or whatever. And he kind of like stumbled over it. And so our reaction was like a little muted. And I think he expected all of us to be like, yay, go Jeff, our hero. But like, we were all just like, does that mean no hourglass? Is that what he said? And we're like, okay, cool. It was just kind of funny.
Yeah, this whole cast, they're just like questioning the power of Jeff, like what can Jeff do to you, is Jeff even worth listening to? I feel like him like coming in hot with that like weird line about like one of you is a big old loser stuff, yeah. They're like
that cut deep.
Okay, Jeff, like damn, like Jeff is like petty Betty, like I don't know what his deal is this season, but he is not an all-powerful god.
Yeah, Lord, well, I mean, Jeff.
We'll have to keep looking throughout the rest of the season, but it did feel like in this episode, Jeff, like the story and the theme of Jeff Probst being God in this season maybe ending. I feel like he transferred the power back over to Banu and like the players and at Tribal. He was like, it's about what you can do for yourself. Like you are your own guru kind of thing. So I think maybe that might be over, but we'll see.
We'll see.
I did appreciate, was it Siga, like talking about the idol, like as if Jeff personally hides it, which is how I like to joke about Survivors that Jeff like does arts and crafts and makes like all the idols himself and like hide it there. So I did appreciate this like omnipotent Jeff who like, personally goes and hides the idols himself.
Yeah, the imagery is great there. Just imagining him in his khaki shorts and his button downs, just like charging around. This looks like a good spot. Yeah.
Well, if he's liable to just hop out of the jungle at any moment, so he must be out there doing something.
He's got a series of underground tunnels from beach to beach, and he can just pop up whenever he wants.
The days of the Survivor gods are over, and it's all about Jeff Probst.
Yeah, that is true, actually. Yeah, people don't say the Survivor gods as much, and they're just like, oh, Jeff, you trickster. Yeah,
that's funny. He's ascended.
Yeah, polytheism is out the door. We're moving into this new sort of like cultural moment of Jeff as God.
Oh, and the podcast is his Bible.
Yes, amen.
He is his prophet.
Mother.
Oh, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I'm like, we should map out one day the like pantheon of like Survivor. It'll happen.
It'll happen. I was going to ask you, as we're going into kind of this next stage of the game, do y'all feel really good about anyone? Like, do you have any like deep rooting interests or people you think are going to like have strong winner potential moving forward? Because like, I think Tiff is potentially going to really be in a really good spot.
Yeah. She's been like, I'm really excited to see where the Tiff Kenzie story goes, because we already have a lot of, you know, conflict, distrust, like both of them doing a lot. I don't know if either of them will make it to the end, but I'm very, that's the relationship I'm most excited to see like where it goes. But yeah, Tiff is definitely, Soda was my winner pick and I'm not feeling as great about it. She really came into the season with a completely different energy than I thought she would. He's not my favorite, but I think Hunter is set up to do really, really well. And I'm really curious to like, if he makes that happen, how he makes that happen. But yeah, from a character like relationships perspective, definitely Kenzie and Tiff.
Yeah, I think the only people I'm like set up to be excited about are like the story that I've been told is that like, oh, I should only care about Yanu kind of right now. Like, I just don't think that Nami or Siga have been like presented as like fun groups to like look out for. In any way, but like I still like some of the people on both of those tribes, but like it feels like that trio of Yanu is the people who we should care about right now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I agree that Tiff, I feel like of those three, feels the most well set up. Just I guess based on Banu's like information that he gave out, it's like, yes, like being in a duo is scary, but like at least you weren't called the mastermind, and I feel like Q is like inherently going to be more threatening just like physically when they get to the merge. And so I think Tiff is really well set up, just even despite like Bonnie blowing up their spot. And yeah, I feel like Hunter Tevin, I feel like, is like a social butterfly. I think he's gonna slot in anywhere. Like, he's got that great relationship with Hunter and with Soda. And but I feel like he, like, as soon as he meets other people, he's gonna be able to, I don't know, make even more connections. So I feel really good about Tevin, honestly.
Yeah. Yeah. He seems like a really great social player. And yeah, to your point, like, I think Q and Hunter like are destined for like 9th, 10th, 8th place, you know, just with their being like the most athletic dudes out there. And Hunter, like, I don't know, like he needs to chill with all these, like with the challenges at the end. Like, he's too good at them. Like, his target, he's already like, you know, 3 inches taller than everyone on the cast. He like sticks out in that respect. And then he's like sinking the 5 basketball shots in like 7 attempts or whatever. Like, I don't know. It's going to be really hard for him, I think, post-merge to not just be voted out immediately if he loses. And just like trying to like, it's interesting trying to just like place this in the context of other seasons. Like, obviously, like the Tika 3 comes to mind, and that's the most recent season that they saw. So like, on one hand, I could see it happening where they are able to wiggle in and move forward and like be those free agents. But like, if that's fresh on everybody's mind and they see the Purple Tribe come in with 3 people again, they're like, hey, like, we have to watch out for that. Like, I wonder if like the meta of watching 44 really recently will affect how, you know, Kenzie, Tiff and Q are able to navigate the merge.
Yeah, it doesn't help that they're purple.
Yeah, exactly. Like, literally the same situation.
And Kenzie has all of Carolyn's tattoos.
Yeah. Yeah. She also had a very Carolyn-esque, like, like when she found out about Banu telling everyone she was running the show. So I see the vision.
Yeah. Do we want, speaking, I guess, of Banu again, Shocker, what do we think of Jeff's, the like official statement that came out about your thoughts on Banu reflect who you are as a person? Like his whole statement where he's like, if Banu upset you or blah, 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 like, how would you react to a Banu? Like, what do we, is that fair of him to say? I don't know.
I got a kick out of it. I still didn't fully understand. Like I read it. Like I didn't listen to the podcast this week, but I was reading that screenshot of it that went viral on Twitter. And I was like, I love the spirit of with what he's saying, but I don't understand like how it came out of his mouth again. I was like, I couldn't fully wrap my head around what he was trying to say. But the point was like, well, like, you're never going to get on the show, so shut up, was kind of what I was getting from that. And I did get a kick out of it a little bit. But yeah, like Banu is one of those characters where you do try to imagine yourself just like, how would I deal with this man? And like, how would I do it? And yeah, I don't know. I just think like being on Twitter, being on Reddit, just like it's starting to get to me, not just like the way everyone's like sob story, sob story, sob story. Like they say it. And I trust me, I get it. Like it is some of them feel very shoehorned in and just like, okay, I get it. But I don't know. Just like it feels very reductive a little bit, just the way some of the people commenting on it are just like, well, I'm sick of sob stories, cast normal people. I'm like, well, normal people have had lives prior to being on the show. Like shit happens to people. And sometimes it's sad. And sometimes it requires overcoming something. And I don't know. I don't think it's so terrible. But yeah, I will say like with the like million hearts thing, like it's clear he came in like wanting to like promote his story, which is great. Cause like I'm pro representation, but I think some of the stories like Tevin's this week, for example, I thought was beautiful, and hearing about his dad rather than like a confessional where he's like, hello, I'm Tevin. My father just passed away recently. Like it was the antithesis of that. It was very much like relevant to what had happened and his experience and those feelings coming up organically. So I think editing, they've done a better job recently than on my season where, you know, certain people, it was just like immediate, like, hi, I'm NECA. You know, this is my life story. So I'm hopeful they're able to thread the needle to help reduce some of that like vitriol towards people who just are living their life. I don't know.
I think it's been much better. Like, I think that I haven't really been bothered by any of the backstory stuff since like 41 or 42. Like, I just think that it was egregious when they started doing it, but I think they've learned how to do it and have done a much better job with it.
Yeah.
Agreed. And it's like you said, Owen, it's like, I understand, I guess, taking issue with it from like an editing perspective or like taking issue with the show. But like, I feel like as a human being, hearing like your like lived experience just called like a sob story is like, that's rough. Like I think there are nicer ways, I guess, to like critique the show without making the players feel like they're just like saying things just to like get sympathy from the viewers, or because it's like you said, it's not all they're talking about. I'm sure it just came up at some point naturally because you're out there by yourself. You're so separated from like your life that it's probably hard not to just like start thinking about like stuff in your life and like having memories come back to you. So it's like, I think people, as always, people could take a little advice from Banu's shirt and be kind, you know?
Be kind.
I'm sure that, you know, they get to these confessional interviews and they're like, can you relate this to something that happened in your life?
Yeah, like,
they're being prompted to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I haven't seen a ton of alum say this, but I saw at least a couple, like, because it's like, I get like, if you're someone like Kenzie in the game with Banu, it's annoying to play the game with someone who's not doing well. And like Kenzie was like, you know, he should have gone on a camping trip. And it's funny, that's a classic survivorism. I get if you're in that situation, you're like, this person is not here to play the game that I'm trying to play. They shouldn't be here. But I saw some like alum like sharing that sentiment, like, you know, like, yeah, he should, but it's like, this is Survivor. Like again, like all the old seasons had people who like, they should have gone on a camping trip. This is nothing new. We're just kind of seeing it in different ways and in like different kinds of personalities showing this. But it's like, again, it's like Survivor. This, it comes from alum being like, you know, well, I came to play, so like, I that's valid and what he's doing is invalid. And then from super fans, it comes from like this idea that like Survivor casting should be like a make-a-wish thing for like the nerdiest dudes on the internet. And it's like, he took my spot. And like both things are just like very like self-centered views of the game, and like we're watching a TV show, like it, like as a viewer, it's interesting. It's not interesting when it drags on for like four episodes, but it's interesting to see people who struggle and who maybe shouldn't be there, because like sometimes people do things that they shouldn't do or that isn't a good fit. And so it's just from both sides. I again, like, more the blame lies with the editors who decided to present it as such a big storyline, who decided to, like, you know, talk about, you know, the, like, shoehorn in these stories, but like that's how it happened, and that's the show. And
I just can't put myself in the headspace of people who felt like Banu like is ruining the season. Like, Banu was one of the only people delivering the season so far, and like that's what we've been presented to. Like, we just watch it in a different, completely different way, because I just can't imagine saying like Banu is making this season bad when other, it's just like it. And also,
he's begging, I feel like, on his hands and knees.
Yeah, like that's amazing, so television. Amazing. And then, like, what was I going to say? And like, it's really only been this episode and last episode that he's like become this major character in my mind. Anyway, like the Jess Boot episode, he was like being talked about as a possible person to take out, but like he really blew up these last two episodes, and now he's gone, and now people are still mad that he has more confessionals than Parvati in Micronesia. When it's like, who cares? Like, he's gone now. He's gone. Not going to get more confessionals.
Yeah. Like, people were doing that with Jacob Derwin on Ghost Island. Everyone's like, oh my God, he took up so much of the end. He was in one episode. Like, it's over. It's done. And yeah, this was 7 hours over four episodes. So I get it. It was a bit longer than normal, but there's a lot of Survivor left. There's a lot of the season left. Mm-hmm. And not to backtrack too far, but Derek, I liked what you said about like people thinking that the players are trying to earn sympathy from the audience. It's like, I saw a great comparison. It's like sob stories, like that idea came from, like, you know, American Idol or somewhere where like the people are voting to affect the game based on the stories. Whereas in Survivor, it's like, that's not what it's like. Like, the audience is just watching, like they're not participating in it. So yeah, I thought that was, someone had framed it that way, and that really clicked for me. Just like, yeah, because when you're seeing those on like America's Got Talent or American Idol or these like shows where the audience has such a big role to play in the decision making, like that's a totally different story, in my opinion.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, just to use Tevin as the example for this episode, like like you said, Owen, like it's fully relevant to what's happening. He's like, it's this fishing story, and he's cleaning the fish, and like it made a beautiful segment. Like, I just can't imagine being mad about that.
Yeah. Yeah, we were tearing up. It was really touching. And then I tweeted about it. And then, of course, Johnny Fairplay is in my replies being like, he should have just told that to a tribe mate. I was like, bro, they showed him talking to his tribe about it. Like, I don't know what you want here.
Yeah. Johnny Fairplay pretending like he's never been on television himself.
Yeah.
I don't think they're looking for Johnny Fairplay's take on explaining your dead relative. Like, they're not going to take his advice.
I saw he has like a full on House of Villains. He's wearing a like she died dude shirt. I was like,
oh my God.
I kind of love that, you know.
It is iconic. It is an iconic moment.
Yeah, like,
chill out, dude.
He can ride that the rest of his life. I'll give that to him. He could.
Yeah, he earned it. He earned
it. Pearl Islands is my favorite season of television, and he's a huge part of why. So like, I'm not against him in general, but like, this take doesn't make sense anymore. It made sense in 2021, and now it's sort of like, it's just not an issue anymore.
Yeah. Right. I agree. Yeah. What do y'all think? There's been a lot of discourse this week about like taking away the flint, like the lack of food. Yeah. Like, people think like it's leading to these disaster tribes, but I don't know. Then on my season, we didn't have a disaster tribe. Like, we lost first, but then got our shit together. So I'm curious what y'all think. Like, do you think it's like hindering the game? Should they stop taking away the flint?
I don't think it's really adding anything.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think it's like a net zero, like you're saying, Chris. Like, yeah, I just feel like the reason the disaster tribes happen, I feel like, is purely because casting kind of deems it so. I feel like there's like, you are putting these groups of people together, you kind of have an idea of how they're going to perform. I think that's more on casting than it is on whoever gives out the flint. I don't know, the flint department.
Like, yeah, like Lulu last season was so, we like, everyone could see, like, from the second we saw that cast picture, like, they are not going to do well. Like, when they were able to look at this tribe and be like, we were like, this tribe is going to be a mess. We, like, you know, it feels, I mean, the two biggest things feel like, yeah, the way they're dividing the tribes, and then just the smaller tribes. Like, if it's a small, like, smaller groups, it's like, if a tribe isn't doing well, there's just fewer people to, like, pull their weight. Like, it's way more like, there's a reason we're getting more train wreck tribes in the new era than we had gotten in, like, you know, just more recent seasons with bigger tribes, just because it's like, yeah, if you have a group of six people and they all are, like, not thriving, they're going to keep not thriving, doing the same challenges over and over again when no one can sit out.
Yep. Yeah, I always think about it in terms of, like the challenges, like, when you're down to four people, each human being is responsible for a quarter of the challenge. Like, whereas if on a 10-person tribe, you know, obviously it's only 10%, like, there's just way less room for error there, and, like, the ramifications of the decisions can, like, lead to this situation. And to your point, Derek, about just, like, the creation of the tribe, that is a part of the process that, like, I would pay so much money to be involved in that and just to see how they do it, because, like, they do the personality tests, they have an idea of how physical we are, like, I'm sure they have an idea of, like, oh, this person's going to hate that person, these people are going to be besties, like, well, how's this, like, chemistry going to work. And then you see, like, certain tribes like Ika, the blue tribe on 42, where they decided to put Zach and Romeo on the same tribe, and they weigh, you know, 150 pounds collectively. Like, it's just, it's so curious, like, how or why they do that. And then they didn't give them Jonathan as their third guy. Like, it was just like,
right.
Like, you get Roxroy as your third. And
but then on 42, they went into the merge. All of the tribes had it lost twice. Like, it was 4-4-4 when they all finally merged. Like, there's some ways where, like, you can't predict it, but then there's other ways, like, you could at least try to, like, make it a little more balanced.
Yeah. Yeah, it is interesting. But I wonder, I think for 43, I think they thought Baka was going to be the shit show tribe. I don't know. That's what everyone was saying when the cast pictures got released, for sure. Yeah.
The name
you guys were, but you won challenges.
Yeah, exactly. We were a shit show, but yeah, exactly. At least we got it together. Although, to be fair, we did, like, cheat at a challenge and Bessie helped us. So I still feel a little bad.
Oh,
for
yes,
that.
I remember.
Yeah. Yeah, we ganged up on Coco because they hadn't lost yet.
I mean, that's
okay.
Yes.
Yeah, all fair. But I do feel bad because Lindsay Carmine and I have gotten close, and that was her boot. So
I
do feel a little guilty about that.
It's your fault.
You personally are to blame for Mother.
I am. Yes, I should have just not made the triangle. But that was such a great moment, because yeah, then Sammy grittied after that.
Yeah.
So he hit the gritty after we built a triangle that we needed help building, and it was amazing,
really locking it in as something that happened in 2022.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's a cultural moment.
That's how you know I'm like, I don't interact with people younger than like 25. I'm like, what? I still am like, what the hell is a gritty? How do you hit it I'm scared.
Yeah, well, that's when I really felt dumb for still believing he was 22. he did the gritty after a chat. Like, there's no way this man is over 21.
There's no way that is a man.
Yeah, except that's a boy. That's still a young lad. Yeah.
I love that. Yeah, thoughts on the he's on the D&D podcast, right? That they made. Or no? Well, no. He's
all 44
glasses,
people.
So yeah. Sorry for being glasses.
Oh, you might be thinking Kane or Matt.
That sounds right.
Or Carson. Or Franny.
I'm like, he's one of those fucking nerds, right?
Yeah. I've never played D&D. I'm hoping, I think Dwight and I might make an appearance on their pod eventually. But I know
so
nothing
fun
about D&D, but I think it'd be fun. It's a good crew of people.
Yeah, they're fierce. Sorry to thinking Sammy was one of you. Also not sorry, because that's such a compliment, because you're all so cool.
Really saving face.
Thank you. I do my best.
Okay, I think we've talked through most of the episode. I guess, like, just like last Manu thoughts. Like, I enjoyed him a lot. I think it's fun that people don't know how to play, and
me too.
We rarely ever see this kind of dynamic between someone like learning the game on the fly anymore. Like Q coaching him, and then like it really led to a lot of conflict when Kenzie was like being asked to help also, and she was like, no, like 1 second. I loved it.
Yeah. Oh, the part where he handed her the coconut and like stormed off. I don't know if y'all noticed that, but that was so funny.
He's like, hey, are you okay? And he's like, no, here. No. And then he walked away.
He walked away. There's been a lot of people questioning, like, what would Banu be like if he got a second chance? Like, I don't think he will, but like, would you be pro Banu second chance? Do you think you would learn a lot? Or do you think
I would love to see it again, but I think it'd be the same.
Yeah. I think it would be the exact same. I agree, Christine.
But that's like why you want him on.
Yeah.
I would much rather him get a second chance than many other people so far through Survivor 46. Like, he gave and he delivered. If he came back, it would be fun.
It would be fun. Yeah. Good luck, Banu. He's what a sweetie. He seems like a really good guy. I'd be curious to meet him and see what he's like in person.
We need to give him a Bruce and put him on 47. Yeah. We need him back right now.
immediate return.
Banu and Randon captains.
Yes.
Season. Oh wait, we didn't even talk about they like didn't vote.
That was fun. Oh, yeah. That pissed me off so much. It was like, what? Yeah. I was kind of like half paying attention when Tribal started because I was like, okay, this is such like a foregone conclusion. And then all of a sudden Jeff was like, bring me your torch. I was like, did I dissociate during the vote? Like, what? It was so bad. I agree with everyone being like, it's a really weird precedent where it's like, if something seems really obvious, like, why did they do it now and not... there have been people who it's been very obvious where they're getting voted out, and I do not understand why they did this.
Yeah,
and it sucks. I hope they don't do it again. Hate it.
Yeah, I would hope that like in their confessional one-on-one with producers, it was like they talked it through. Like I in some way that it was confirmed that it's like okay to do this because it's so random, especially with someone who has an idol. Like. I mean, it obviously Tiffany didn't want to play it on Banu, but like there's still things that can happen even if everybody's saying, yeah, I'm gonna vote for Banu. Like it's Survivor, they could lie.
Yeah. I think Sam, you hit it on the head. There must have been just zero inkling or discussion of any potential other plan that like Jeff knew that there was no possibility that it wasn't gonna be Banu. But yeah, I agree, Christine. Like it's just like what if in the future then someone thinks they're going home or they think they've got someone where everyone's voting for them and then they do vote, then they're like, oh wait, is something else happening here? Like I think it'll increase like paranoia and yeah, it just sets a weird standard.
It's also interesting to me because in this moment Jeff is like, you know, it's rare that it ever happens that we're not lying, we're like open about who's going home, and it's intoxicating to me, which is not at all what he's ever said before. He's like, it's constantly like the lie, the trickery, we need at least the possibility of a shot in the dark, like there always needs to be some other thing that could happen, when it's like, no, like this is right, like the possibility of someone knowing they're going home is fun to me. Like it, I'm just like parroting lack of advantages would be better, but that's just how I felt.
Yeah, it did feel incongruent in that sense. You're right.
Yeah, it's like to put Banu on the same level as like Brandon Hance or like other people who've been like, it's like that we should reserve it for when it's like physically uncomfortable to be around this person for any longer, not for when someone is like on the bottom. I just don't think that's a good idea, like you said, to make that a thing, especially after like so much shit was given to Hannah Rose and Sean for like essentially quitting at Tribal. It's like to draw that sort of connection is like, I don't like that. It's like
the Sean thing is a great example because it's like they like if something like that were to happen, I don't know, it's just because that was one where it could have been a foregone conclusion, but we know certain people still wanted, like it seemed really obvious from the Tribal that he would go, and they like
Sifu still got a vote.
Yeah, exactly. It's like who? I don't think anything crazy would have happened here, but like, it sets a weird precedent because that was so funny last season that it was such a foregone conclusion, and Sifu still got a vote.
Yeah, who voted Sifu?
Talk about it from the like Wikipedia side. Like, this would ruin someone's perfect game. Like if someone got a vote here, but now it's not even a possibility.
I know.
Wait.
Sad. RIP Banu, would love to see him again, like we said. Anyone who said, I kept seeing people say like he's the worst casting decision ever, I'm like, you could say he's like the worst player ever, which I also would disagree with, but also like he's one of the best casting decisions ever. You need this guy on TV.
All time bad at the game, but all time amazing TV.
yeah
Those things are generally like you can't, they do not track. Yeah. They are reverse correspondent, but whatever.
I'm exactly. Trying to think of. Correlation
is what I'm trying to think something. Of.
Yeah. Any other thoughts on the episode proper before I guess we get into edity stuff?
Love. I think Tiffany or Kenzie was like, if you want to win a million hearts, go volunteer.
Yes. Tiff said that. That was amazing. Was
hilarious. He should have gone camping. Great, 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 great stuff. Yeah. So Owen, do you want to, I guess, remind the people where they can find you in case people want to dip out before Edric Talk?
Yeah, absolutely. So on Twitter, I'm the Young Knight with a zero as the O. And then I'm the Young Knight on Instagram with all letters. And yeah, just living my life, getting married this fall.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Also honored to be a dirty hetero invited to the podcast here. So thank you. I'm flattered, honestly. It's a badge of honor. Just living my life. Work is good. Life is good. And yeah, still enjoying Survivor.
Yes. I think we should set up a thing of like, you have to have at least three like known queer people who like vouch for you before you're allowed on.
The vetting process. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
When I tweet out this episode, we'll introduce you as a dirty hetero.
I love that. What about you, Christine? Where can people find you?
You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at the X-Teen Files. You can read my writing on Inside Survivor with Gia Worthy. The Shadow Play Gay still exists the ether. And I think that's it. And we also have Patreon. I'll do it first in case anyone skips out. We do podcasts where we just talk about fun little things, talk about music, talk about movies, talk about Survivor. Check us out on there if that's something you're interested in.
Oh yeah. It's a fun time. Sam, what about you?
My other podcast, Buffy Boyfriends, going strong. Talking about Buffy the Vampire Slayer with my boyfriend. That's it.
Oh, yeah.
And wait, and if you're in New York, obviously come to the Crystal Lake watch parties every Wednesday.
Survivor. The island. I would love to go.
You should.
It looks fun.
Yeah.
New York. You can follow me at Rain Dierks on Twitter. Follow us, Bitter Jurors Pod, Twitter, Instagram. That's it, right?
Okay. I think so.
Edric time.
Yes. Owen,
do you have any, I know it's like hard to look through the fog of Yanu, but like, is there anyone, we kind of touched on this, but anyone who like edit wise, you're like, I'm watching this person.
I think Tevin is up there for sure. I pulled up one of the charts, just to see, cause I know he's to me, like as a, like a someone who knows Edric exists, but not like a student of it. Like it's felt very positive. And then to see the complex personality on there, I think it's accurate. I mean, we've gotten these hints where he could have this like, well, first of all, just the way he speaks and presents himself, it's so like theatrical, but I mean that in the most positive way. Like he has this gravitas to him that I think is going to be really entertaining no matter how you slice it. To watch him, he could become this like Machiavellian like villain type where he's like pulling the strings, or like just this incredible social player. So I think we've seen the capability of him doing both. So I think he's one to watch for me. And then I just really like Ben a lot. I know I touched on it earlier a little bit. Like he's gotten this like, I think it was the first episode Tim called him like what, the Dean of Cultural Affairs or something. Like he's just kind of setting the tone for the tribe and everyone seems to love him. So I'm curious if he might emerge as like someone who's like so likable that we must get rid of him because he's going to win at the end no matter what or what the situation is. But I don't know. You just don't see people like him all the time. Like he feels like a cartoon character in a lot of ways, but just like a very lovable one to me. So those are two I love. I was really sad that Venus didn't get any confessionals or hardly anything this week just because I was really rooting for her and I still am. But like that made me obviously dubious on her longevity in the game.
Yeah, I agree. I think those are good picks. I think, yeah, Ben is like a character who could have been like really flat or like one note, but I feel like they do a good job of making him a
music.
Little music. Hello. But I do feel like, I mean, I don't think he talks a lot of strategy, but I still feel like I know where Ben stands with people at least. And I think nowadays for the new era, I think that's plenty to go off of. But like you said, I feel like maybe that might lean more towards like big character in like merge time than winner. Whereas I feel like Tevin, like getting that story this week felt really good. And we just always know where Tevin is at in the game too. And that I think is really, really good for Tevin.
Because even like even the negative stuff like from Venus's perspective about Tevin is like he's so nice and likable, but he just doesn't like me.
Yeah. So it's like I feel really good about Tevin. I feel like you're saying, Owen, I feel like we would see him anyway because he does have that natural gravitas to him, but he's also really complex. So like that's good. And I feel like the Siga tribe, I feel like they kind of have Luvu upside just in like the sense that like I could still see a winner coming from there. I would be upset if like we didn't learn our lesson from Erica that like that just doesn't make good TV when the winner is like hidden that way. But I honestly, this might sound cuckoo, but like came out of this episode like really feeling Mariah, honestly. like the jumping stuff, I was like D's foot vibes, maybe. I don't know. I just feel like I came out of this, I was like, I kind of understand Mariah more. She seems like she has a good head on her shoulders. I just feel like it's hard to look past the fact that the big headline on Green is Charlie and Maria.
I think that it's more about Jem's idol now. Like I came out of this episode much higher on Jem than I have been in the past, and much lower on Kenzie, who was kind of my number one before this. Like, I think that we are, I mean, I guess I'm waiting for more personal stuff from Jem, but I feel like she and her place in the game has been very clear from the beginning, where she's like, I'm working with the girls, and then Charlie also, even though that's been taken over as like Charlie and Maria, like I feel like it was still set up for Jem, and then she's close with Mariah, and now she's got this idol thing going on. So she's got like a storyline.
Sure. I'm glad to see it, because in the preseason, I'll be honest, like I wasn't getting a ton from her. I was like, I don't know if she's gonna be that good or whatever. And then we didn't see a ton from her. So I am glad that she's like starting to pick it up and play. Just quick aside, do y'all think if Siga were to lose, where do you think Charlie and Maria are going to go?
I just feel like they set up way more. I mean, and obviously a lot of this does have to do with, I guess, like Tim being so quiet. It's just like, I feel like it's going to be like the women. Like they set that up way more.
Yeah.
I just think that's where it's going to head. And, you know, we love that a lot. As much as we love Tim, it's like,
I know. I felt bad for Tim, especially in this episode specifically, because like it feels like there was such a clear setup for a possible like feel good story with Tim, where like in the reward challenge he jumps onto that platform and like completely flops, and then in the immunity challenge he jumps on the platform and like fully saves the tribe. He jumps into the water to get his own buoy and like still wins the challenge, and like nothing. He's just, like,
not in the episode. The challenge did itself. Like we have no reaction to that. Poor guy. Love his use of the buff. I feel like you know, can't knock that.
And then I feel like it is, my prediction is that it will not be a Yanu winner. I feel like Tiff is maybe like the best option of the three, but I just feel like they've all been portrayed rather negatively, especially around like their opinions on Banu, and it's obviously hard not to like be seen in this hypercritical way of with this guy who is genuinely not good at Survivor, but like they have been, it's been a somewhat bad look from the editing perspective.
It's like, same with the Jess boot too.
That's true. It's like they didn't need to go that hard into like they really are gonna vote out Jess, and they're like not remorseful.
Which like I'm fine with as a, from like the players doing it, but as a character, when we're talking through Edric, like that's just not something that they generally do with the winner.
Agreed.
And it's like we've seen what it looks like when that group does do well with, and they that would be, you know, the season where those are the three only characters of the season. So it's like we have a precedent, and they're not like meeting that bar. Christine, what are your thoughts?
I'm not all out on Yanu yet, because that's, it's fair. Kind of like there, I agree, it what they didn't look great with in like the context of the narrative of like how they handled the Jess thing and the Banu thing, but the edit also just really harped on how much of a mess both of those people are, even though Banu, I was still the edit wasn't like cruel to them, it's still like we liked I think just show Jess to be like a likable person who has a lot of her depth. Banu's a nice person, but like wasn't fit for the game, and so like they did do those things, they did have those responses to the players, and the edit like even if it like they, you know, we come out of that like oh, you know, they didn't look amazing in that, it's like the edit also backed up that like okay, Joss was kind of a mess. Banu is kind of a train wreck.
Yeah.
So that's not enough for me to fully rule them out. I need to see where this goes, obviously. I'm curious, like because we noted how weird it was that there was this emphasis on like last episode, we were gonna get Kenzie out. Is this like that is a potential thread, the Erica of it all?
Not yes, to that's true.
It's very different, but of like, will that be like a game changing thing, Randon being medevaced, and like maybe they were actually considering getting Kenzie out and they didn't, and then she wins. That's like, that's not enough to get all on board with it, but that would explain maybe why there's this weird emphasis on that.
Yeah. I said that last week also because the week before was also between Jess and Kenzie, and like, and they did the same thing with like Marianne, where people were like, it's either going to be Mariah or Marianne, and then like, that I think that's a story they do like to tell a lot. I've shied away from it based off the negativity in this episode and just like that thing Derek mentioned where it's like one of you is not going to be liked by the rest of the tribe or like the cast, and then it cuts to Kenzie. Like it's very, they do that kind of thing with the Matt chat, like where it tells the story of the whole season right there or whatever, and it, cutting to Kenzie in that moment is really bad for her, I would say.
It was rough. So I feel like we've got our main players, and I feel like there's I don't know. I wonder if like the Banu arc was its own thing, and then like maybe things will switch up in the edit in a way where like suddenly we have a lot more options, or like people switch around. But I feel like this first segment of the show is usually like very telling in a lot of ways. I agree. Great thoughts, everyone. We're all so smart.
Agreed. Oh, and thanks so much for being here. Or
what, thanks for having me. Yeah, like, this wasn't the like meatiest episode to talk about, but I still really had fun, and I think we talked through a lot of like potential of where it could go forward and everything. So I'm excited. I'm excited about the season. To me, I think Derek, to your point, you just said like this almost felt like a prologue almost to the rest of the season. Like we really haven't gotten a ton from Nami and Siga. So I'm excited to see where it goes. And yeah, fingers crossed that Yanu doesn't lose again. Like, I don't know if I could handle that. And I don't know if they could handle that. Like that's gotta be rough for morale. So here's to brighter episodes ahead. We'll see.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I hope that Tevin and Soda and Ben can come together with the power of music and just we'll see what happens.
They'll rock out to the very end. I would love that. Thank you, Owen, so much as always. Thank you all for listening to us. Love ya. We'll see y'all next week for hopefully, like we said, brighter, bigger things. We'll see.
A different tribe going to tribal.
Different I believe in Survivor 46.
Yes.
Yes, I'm not writing her off just yet. So see you all next week. Bye.
Bye. Bye.